the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who has spurned insolent poetry, the ladies on the roofs of all the houses in the synagogue began to talk of him. This talk was more attractive than the hymns of the Vedas. Okay. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said that in all the Vedic literatures the goal is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. Factually, the glories of the Lord are depicted in such literature as the Vedas, Ramayana and Mahabharata. And in the Bhagavatam, there is specifically mentioned that, and in the Bhagavatam, they are specifically mentioned in respect to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, while the ladies on the tops of the houses in the capital of the kings of the Kuru dynasty were talking about the Lord, their talk was more pleasing than the Vedic hymns. Anything sung in the praise of the Lord is Shruti Mantra. There are songs of Thakur Narottam Das, one of the Acharyas in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, composed in simple Bengali language. But Thakur Vishwanath Chakravarti, another very learned Acharya of the same Sampradaya, has approved the songs by Thakur Narottam Das to be as good as Vedic mantras. And this is so because of the subject matter. The language is immaterial, but the subject matter is important. The ladies, who were all absorbed in the thought and actions of the Lord, developed the consciousness of Vedic wisdom by the grace of the Lord. And therefore, although such ladies might not have been very learned scholars in Sanskrit or otherwise, still whatever they spoke was more attractive than the Vedic hymns. The Vedic hymns in the Upanishads are sometimes indirectly directed to the Supreme Lord, but the talks of the ladies were directly spoken of the Lord, and thus they were more pleasing to the heart. The ladies' talks appear to be more valuable than the learned Brahmins' benedictions. Anyonyam asit sanjalpa utama shloka chetasam kauravendra pura strinam sarva shruti manoharam. Absorbed in the thought of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who has sung insolent poetry, the ladies on the roofs of all the houses of Hastinapur began to talk of him. This talk was more attractive than the hymns of the Vedas. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthayam Tulaye Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prasthitya Deshtane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gauravani Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the Lord is departing from Hastinapur to Dwaraka, but he's still in Hastinapur as is stated here in this verse. And it's bringing out a very, very important point, a very interesting point in Krishna consciousness, very important point, that the point is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a mood of love and affection, and to appreciate him and express appreciation in those terms, and not, and that is the point more than, although of course it's also important to just technically, philosophically explain different aspects of his greatness and so on like that. Although of course that's very important, and for certain people it's very essential. Those who are not devotees and those who are just in the very early stages, and they may doubt the position of the Lord and doubt the necessity or importance of surrendering to the Lord, and who may possibly think that the Lord has real competitors, maybe some demigods or people like that, and who should our attention be focused on, so on and so forth, and what to speak of those who are just coming, or who are in material existence, to bring them from just outright material existence, to stimulate them in such ways that they may take up Krishna consciousness. Of course, to understand the position of the Lord in those philosophical terms, and our position also, and the nature of this world, and what is the process of devotional service as compared and contrasted with the process of material existence and materialistic way of life and so on, material consciousness. Srila Prabhupada emphasized very strongly that for preaching in those terms to those types of people, that book distribution was the most important activity, more important than, for example, trying to just explain to the people ourselves, although of course there's a place for that to some degree, but better they get the books, because the books are the chanting of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the great devotees, but even most particularly actually the books are the chanting of Srila Prabhupada himself. And for so many people, and very particularly, I mean actually for all devotees really, but for the non-devotees, oh, that is by far the best thing that they hear from Srila Prabhupada, who is particularly empowered to address the positions of the conditioned souls in this Kali Yuga. When Srila Prabhupada first presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, the first version, which is not really very commonly seen nowadays, it's sort of like a collector's item perhaps more than anything. I think it's the old purple Bhagavad Gita with the super soul on the front. So that the very first edition, Prabhupada did not do translations, he only did purports. The translations were taken from, I think it was the Ramakrishna Bhagavad Gita or something like that. Some other version at least, by some other people who are not in Sampradaya, because Prabhupada assumed that their translations would basically be adequate, although later it was found that they were not adequate. For example, they described, when the duties of the Vaishyas are described in the 18th chapter, Krishi Go Rakshya Vanijyam, Go Rakshya, which very clearly means protecting cows, is very important activity for the Vaishyas, that particular, wherever the translations were taken from, it said cattle raising. So anyway, then Prabhupada did his own translations. But he emphasized that really the main thing is the purport. The main thing is the purport. Even when we actually have, like Bhagavad Gita, with his translations, but still the main things are the purports. Because if, particularly if an inexperienced person simply reads the translations, well, how much they may get, it won't be so much compared to if they read the purports by Srila Prabhupada himself, then they really get something of great, great value. So that on the transcendental platform of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in terms of pleasing Him through appreciating Him, glorifying Him like that, then, of course, the hymns of the Vedas being mentioned here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions briefly the verses of the Upanishads. So actually they're glorifying the Supreme Lord. They are glorifying the Supreme Lord. But in so many cases it's done indirectly. Shishi Radha Radha King, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu King, Sri Giri Govardhan King. In many cases, it's done indirectly. Either indirectly, like, anyway, either indirectly or by glorifying some secondary aspect of the Lord. Like, for example, even in the Bhagavatam, you find some verses which describe the Lord or the Absolute Truth, who, of course, ultimately is Krishna, in impersonal terms. He's all pervading and so on and so forth. So it is a glorification of the Lord because, well, it's a glorification of the Brahman feature, which is simply a feature of the Lord. It is not another thing. It is not that there is Krishna and then there is the Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti, and they're two things. The Brahma Jyoti is his effulgence. So you cannot just separate it from him as such. But when you focus on that, particularly people who are not knowledgeable, they may become confused. But in terms of actually glorifying him, it's not such a nice glorification as glorifying his personality, how he relates with his devotees, his wonderful personal qualities. This is much more relishable for the devotees, and the Lord himself appreciates it much more than hearing things like he walks but he does not walk. This is the Ishapanishad, of course, which is more personal than some of the Upanishads, which really, some of them really focus on the Brahman feature of the Lord. And what is the Brahman feature of the Lord? Jiva Goswami explains that it is the Lord minus his form and minus his personality. If you have the Lord and you take away his form, or his form is obscured and his personality is obscured, but still he's there, what you have is the Brahman effulgence. and then a step on. If you have the Lord, and you have His form, but you don't have His personality, that is the Paramatma, in certain terms at least, or in very simple terms. Because as the Super Soul, He's simply overseeing and permitting, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 13:23, Upa Drashta Anumanta Cha. Upa Drashta, watching from above, overseeing, and Anumanta, permitting, allowing certain things to happen. This is basically the function, sort of the lifestyle, the way of life of the Super Soul. He oversees, he permits, but he doesn't really get personally involved so much. So, the ladies on the rooftops there in Hastinapur, they're great devotees. They're very wonderful devotees. And they appreciate the Lord so much in personal terms. His beauty, His sweetness, His character, how He deals with His devotees, like this. And as they were watching Him from the rooftops, then naturally they're expressing those things. And it's just very wonderful, because the qualities of Krishna are just so amazing that when they're expressed nicely, appropriately, oh, it is very amazing. You know, in material life, there's so much, there's so many newspapers and magazines and publications, and you get these sort of, what do you call them, show business personality type magazines. What this one is doing, what is Shah Rukh Khan doing, and what is some other starlet doing, and who they were seen with, what they were wearing, and how they were conducting themselves. It is the mundane, and we mean mundane, reflection of what was going on here on the rooftops, because, you know, how much can you glorify, not just how much can you glorify these people, but how glorifiable are they? I mean, if you look at them as persons, their actual characters, even their physical appearance, for some years, by certain standards, they may look nice. By just the everyday relative standards. But these types of standards, the appearance of the Lord, and even the appearances, the beauty of the elevated devotees, oh, if you really glorify that in truly appropriate terms, oh, that is now something extremely relishable, amazing by our standards, by any standards. Yes. It's stated in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, when there's during the course of the discussion of the Rasa Dance, it's described how beautiful the gopis were. They were just most uniquely beautiful. And they were so beautiful that even the goddess of fortune, compared to them, didn't look so attractive. And what to speak of the women of the heavenly planets? They're just down further, considerably further. And what to speak of ordinary worldly women, the verse says, who may be beautiful according to just ordinary worldly terms. What to speak of, you know, what, Miss Chatsworth, 2014. Some people may get very excited. But truly, compared to the gopis, oh, it's very pathetic, actually. It's very, very pathetic. And that it could be called beauty, and people might get so absorbed in it and describing it and so on like that, just shows such a poor fund of knowledge, and just such a limited experience of what is nice and what is beautiful. So, this talk of the ladies, as Prabhupada mentions here, they may not have been very learned scholars in Sanskrit. You see, when Srila Rupa Goswami, for example, and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, they've written some dramas, particularly Rupa Goswami has written two very major dramas, Lalita Madhava and Vedanta Madhava. And it's all about Krishna and the gopis and Vrindavan and Dwarika, in the case of Lalita Madhava, or at least some of it. Vedanta Madhava is simply about the Vrindavan pastimes. And Srila Rupa Goswami was a very great Sanskrit scholar. Very great Sanskrit scholar. As you or I might be expert and completely au fait with Chatsworth English. So it's just second nature completely, and we never have to think how to say, how to express something in really true Chatsworth terms. And I don't mind me saying that. I live here too. So Rupa Goswami was completely conversant in Sanskrit. And Lokanath Maharaj, who's somewhat of a Sanskrit scholar, he was showing us, a year or a couple of years ago maybe, some of Rupa Goswami's poetry, where, you know, it's so complex, it's even hard to just say what it is. It was so incredibly complex, just totally mind-boggling, that a verse is written and then the words are rearranged in different ways and you get the... But it's all saying the same thing, whether you read the verse across on a diagonal or backwards on a diagonal, or it doesn't make sense, does it? Because it's, yeah, very hard to explain. We'll have to ask him to explain it sometime or show it. Wow. You know, his capability with the language, to use the language and express meaning in different ways. He's like the sort of consummate Sanskrit scholar. But in these dramas, he has the different bridge buses, eternal associates of the Lord. They're not speaking Sanskrit. They're speaking like a sort of village type version of the language, like Chatsworth English, maybe. Anyway, you know, it's very colloquial, very, very, and it's actually quite different from Sanskrit, although you can see it's definitely based in Sanskrit. Some sort of like Prakrit, they're different forms called Prakrit, different Prakrit versions. But occasionally someone says something in Sanskrit when there's some formal type of situation, that someone says something in Sanskrit. So in Goloka Vrindavan, generally they don't speak, they're not conversing in Sanskrit. In Vaikuntha, they converse in Sanskrit. But in Goloka Vrindavan, in Gokula Vrindavan, then they have some village form, Sanskrit based, but it's really very simplified. But Krishna loves to hear that. And here, of course, the ladies are glorifying him. As Prabhupada says, they might not have been very learned scholars in Sanskrit, so probably they're using just a local language, typical conversational language. And the Lord, that was more appreciable than these technical glorifications from the Upanishads or in some cases from the four Vedas. But what to speak of the Lord being more pleased with this sort of talk by the ladies on the rooftops in Hastinapur, when Jatila chastises Krishna, when the gopis, Radharani, Lalita, when they chastise Krishna, and sometimes strongly, and in like apparently criticizing him severely, but it's imbued with devotional love, and Krishna appreciates that even more than these words of these ladies in Hastinapur, because they're not on the same level as the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So there is, in the strict structure of the Vedic literatures, there's the Shruti and Smriti sections. Shruti basically means the four Vedas, including the Upanishads, and Smriti basically means anything else, like the Puranas, the Itihasas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, and there are Smriti Dharma Shastras, like Ayurveda, Dhanurveda. These are Smriti literatures. Dharma Shastras, how to live, how to organize society. So generally the four Vedas and their corollary, immediate corollaries, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads, they're generally referred to as Shruti, and they are more technical. The Sanskrit is more technical, Vedic Sanskrit it's called. Sanskrit is more technical, and they're less directed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at least in obvious and clear ways. Whereas what are normally referred to as the Smriti Shastras, culminating in the Puranas, which culminate in Srimad Bhagavatam, they use a different form of Sanskrit called by Western scholars classical Sanskrit. It's a different, somewhat different form of Sanskrit. But they have much more glorification of the Lord. Ramayana, there's so much glorification of Lord Ram. In Mahabharata, there's quite a bit of glorification of Lord Krishna, plus Bhagavad Gita's there. And then in the Puranas, there's a lot of glorification of Krishna, many pastimes in different of the Puranas. And then you come to Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the ripened fruit, it's just full of nectar about Krishna. So, Prabhupada's making the point here, you know, the strict scholars of the Vedas, they're sometimes called Vedic, those strict scholars will distinguish Shruti from Smriti, the four Vedas from the other, the Puranas and Itihasas like that. They'll distinguish them and they'll say that the Shruti mantras are higher, the four Vedas are higher. Particularly we get nowadays the Arya Samaj, they're very attached to that idea, very attached to the Shruti being higher than the Smriti. Yes. And although of course in South Africa they're more interested in philanthropic activity than actual anything really spiritual. But Prabhupada's making the point here that anything sung in the praise of the Lord is Shruti mantra. Means, you know, like really strictly Vedic and on the highest level. And it doesn't matter even what the language is. Prabhupada here is saying how Narottam Das Thakur has written many songs, we sing some of them, of course, and there are many, many others. And they're very beautiful glorifications of Krishna and of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and so on, and expressions of different devotional feelings. But they're done in simple Bengali language. Even Bengali, there are different levels of Bengali. And Narottam Das Thakur's songs are done in a sort of people's version of Bengali. Not like a higher level scholarly form of Bengali with higher sort of more complex vocabulary and so on. But Prabhupada brings out in the purport here that Srila Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur, who was big scholar and big Sanskritist, like something like Srila Rupa Goswami, but he said that the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, they're as good as the Vedic literatures. They're Shruti mantras and should be their value, their importance, it should be equated with, you know, the high level Vedic statements and so on. And what to speak of Srila Narottam Das Thakur, but the fact is that the purports of Srila Prabhupada are also on the same level. They're not like second best, you know, very, very, very nice, very useful, but not on the same level. You know, like a poor man or common man's Vedic knowledge. Actually, they're on the same, they're Shruti mantras in English. Shruti mantras in English. So the main point is the devotion, the bhakti which is there. And not the sophistication and technical excellence, etc. The main point is the devotion. So therefore, when the Lord heard, or anyone heard, how the ladies were appreciating the form of the Lord, just see how he looks like this and he looks like that, and they would glorify different parts, see his hands, see his fingers, see his toenails, not normally considered to be very glorious parts of the body, to focus on and examine from the point of view of how they look, their appearance. But they would see the Lord's toenails and just go to total ecstasy and just be stunned by the incredible beauty of the toenails. Yes. Like in Dankeli Chintamani of Raghunath Das Goswami, Lord Krishna tries to charge Srimati Radharani a tax for passing on the road. And he starts with the parting of her hair. That for the parting of your hair, you have to pay, I forget what, but it's thousands of valuable gems. And then for your hair, some incredible, like multi millions of dollars worth of some other gems for your forehead, for your hair, just for your eyebrows, you have to pay some fantastic tax, which by any ordinary person's standards would be completely out of their reach. Because they're just so beautiful, that they have value. They have value, and appreciating them is just such an experience. So, of course, Vedaischa Sarvairaham Eva Vedyo, Vedanta Krit Veda Vid Eva Chaham. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15 that by all the Vedas I'm to be known. This is why the Vedas are there, he's saying. Just to know me means Krishna the person, to appreciate Krishna the person. So, and Krishna says that I'm the person who knows the Vedas. And actually, I'm the person who has put together the Vedas. I have compiled the Vedas. So this is the point. How much appreciation of the Lord is being expressed appropriate ways, how appropriate, in what depth, with what feeling. This is actually really how to evaluate the value of a certain literature or certain part of the Vedic literatures. How much does it really help us come closer to Krishna and reawaken our forgotten relationship with Krishna and learn how to approach Krishna? And also, of course, learn how to get out of material existence. So the ladies' talks were more valuable than the learned Brahmins' benedictions, because they are just so rich in appreciation for Krishna and love for Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Before Madhu Mangal Prabhu, Surat Damodar Prabhu, some words of wisdom. Okay.
You were saying that invite him to the residency in Sanskrit.
Generally.
In Sanskrit. And in Goloka, they speak some village type of dialect.
Right.
But then there's another break, they also in Goloka. Do they speak?
They speak Bengali. Oh, they definitely speak Bengali. Lord Chaitanya speaks Bengali. In other words, Bengali is a very special language. Of course, there's Bengali on different levels to some degree also. Yeah, like the Bengali in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bengali devotees have told me, it's a somewhat higher level Bengali, a little bit scholarly, a better type of Bengali. Yeah. But basically, Bengali is a dialect of Sanskrit. It's completely Sanskrit-based. And, you know, even would you believe, His Holiness Krishnadas Swami Maharaj told me that Bengali, of all the current-day Indian languages, Bengali is the closest to Sanskrit. That's quite something. Yeah. It's got many Sanskrit words, vocabulary, but the grammar is very simple. Yeah. You know, they use words like for but, not this but that. Kintu is the normal Bengali word. Kintu. Kintu is the normal Sanskrit word for but. Whereas in Hindi, Kintu is considered should Hindi, you know, high Hindi. And they would normally use, they don't use Kintu in normal speech so much. Yeah. But then, you know, in because Dwarka is in Goloka also. Dwarka is in Goloka. And Mathura is in Goloka. So there they normally speak Sanskrit. Yeah. But in Vrindavan, they speak, you know, some Brajabhasya or some Braj language. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Braja, what they call Brajabhasya now in Vrindavan, on this planet, is you know, exactly that language. Maybe, you know, it may be something close, but... because it's also taken its own sort of, you know, changes of direction over the centuries. But in Goloka Vrindavan, in Vrindavan, they speak, yeah, village language. And even, you know, you see in the dramas, Rupa Goswami has someone in certain situations speaking Sanskrit. So it appears, you know, they have knowledge of Sanskrit. In other situations, they speak Prakrit, some actual form of Prakrit, which was an intermediate form between Sanskrit and the current day languages, like Hindi particularly. And then other verses they speak, it's a dialect. Yes, Madhavangal Prabhu, please. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Nice, wonderful to see you.
I'd like your kind permission to like to ask a question and make a comment.
You can.
Thank you. In the beginning of the class, you were talking about the ladies of Dwarka. Praising was more valuable than the run.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking, I just had the experience of that the other day, right here, when I came out of the temple. I was walking out the door and I was coming down at the bottom of the security guard sitting on his chair. So I walked up to the security guard and said, "Hello, how are you? Everything all right?" He said, "Yes." I put my hands up in the air. I said, "Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Chandra, Prabhu Chandra." And the next thing he did, he sort of unlaced his shoes. He took his shoes off and said, "Hare Krishna." They went down and he made a voice.
Really?
And I just realized after that, you know, that the security guard doesn't count 69 a day. He doesn't follow the four regular principles. Not like a regular devotee like us, but just hearing appreciation.
Good, nice.
And then the same night I was sitting back there watching him, and he walked past me, but he didn't recognize me, and then he turned around and I recognized him, and he said, "Oh, how are you?" And he came down and he helped us and he said, "Please, you must tell me more now about this Hare Krishna."
Okay.
And Mr. Babu luckily had such a hand in his head. And again, when he said to him, he said, I showed him how to chant.
Good.
And he, about the third time, he got to chant, he just tried to get a devotee. That was, I didn't realize that he is a devotee in Sangha.
Yeah, well, association. Anyone can become a devotee. You know, we became devotees. We were, you know, not, we were in some other type of consciousness altogether. So, yeah. Good, thank you.
And the question is, can we, our devotees, write hymns and prayers and have a part of our Islamic songbook?
I wouldn't really expect that.
No, I mean, when we are writing, when we are if we write a prayer or something, is that just as good as, I wouldn't say the way it is, but...
Well, it depends who we are. It depends on the individual.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm sure as devotees advance, obviously they'll be able to express things better and better and better and more Krishna conscious ways. But the song books, they're basically reserved for the previous acharyas. But, you know, there are devotees who write Krishna conscious poetry. You know, and some of it's nice. Kushakrata Prabhu, who passed away, he wrote a lot of poetry. And it was very nice. And there are numerous devotees who do like that. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I was just remembering what we were talking about. Krishna actually appreciated so much this harsh speech of Lalita, especially in relation. He actually relishes this better than, as you were saying, better than the Vedic hymns. So, I think the Mandapur was sharing with us, because he speaks Brajvas language, and although in the modern day today it may be diluted somewhat, but the culture or the mood that is there, we can have some idea of it. And he was telling us that it's such a dynamic language in the sense when they chastise, it's so sharp. And when they glorify or they're using it to praise, it's so sweet. So it has two extremes in it. Being in Vrindavan, it took me quite a while to even understand the way they speak. Because the intonation, the tone of their voice, it's not like the way we would stress words. Like you would say, "Good morning, how are you?" So that tone, you can try to, okay, the person is asking something. It's not, but the way it's spoken locally, the local Brajwas language, if you just use intonation, you won't understand the language. It has that somewhat sharpness to it, at the same time, it has that feature of being sweet at the same time. So it's quite unique, even though it's been 5,000 years old. But even up to today, the language structure, the way it's spoken, is kind of unique.
Okay. Well, I know, you know, like in Sanskrit and Hindi, there's to address a person, there's respectful form, there's informal form, and in other languages too, in French, in Russian, you know, they have respectful way of saying you, and for informal way for a friend or family member of saying you, different word. In Brajavasya they don't. It's only the informal way. Tum. Only. There's no aap in Brajavasya. Yeah, but there's some pretty weird things in Brajavasya too. My gosh. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.